everyone. Welcome back to Selected Prose. Today's guest is the brilliant Nada Alich. Her new book is called Bad Thoughts. It was published by Vintage. I have put links to the book in the episode description so you can buy it, because you should buy it. I really do highly recommend it. Nada is a refreshingly original writer. She has a very unique voice. She writes characters that you won't forget, that I haven't forgotten. Probably because I've seen myself in them, or parts of myself, and felt gravely concerned. I really did laugh about a dozen times, I counted, while reading Bad Thoughts. Genuine laughter, not modest chuckles, but laughs. I believe that's quite an achievement, to make somebody laugh while reading your book. And Nada does it. Some people have compared her to Miranda July or Sally Rooney. I don't know what that means. I don't understand it. But I just think Nada Alich is Nada Alich. And she's great. So here's our talk. I hope you enjoy it. If you do enjoy it, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or support it on Patreon, or send me a friendly tweet or something, or an email or a letter or anything else, whatever your preferred method of communication is. So here we go. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you learn something. And here's Nada.
Yeah, I am good. I feel insane.
Why? Busy?
Yeah, is this the start of the podcast, or is this the pre part?
I usually just don't do a pre part and just start. Okay, sorry, I guess, right. I should tell people that.
Yeah. I'm like, am I just like off the cuff? Okay, cool. I'm just going to act like it's going.
Welcome. Wait, by the way, I'd like to clarify for the record. As a Croatian, your name is pronounced Nada Alić, right?
Alić. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard like Alec on some podcast.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the American way to say it.
Okay. But I won't. It's Alić.
Wait, why is your last name Perry?
Oh, because my mother's Croatian, my dad's Irish.
Oh, okay.
So Perry is not. Yeah, so her last name, her maiden name was Delosh.
Okay, cool. I feel like most of them are end in IC, but.
Anyway, I just wanted to clarify it because.
Yeah.
If I got your name wrong, I'd be like extra embarrassed.
Yeah, no, I know. For you, that would be humiliating.
I know.
I am good. Did you just get back from Croatia?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Just the best. Just the
best.
Where
did you go?
Split, Hvar, Trogir, Vis. Have you been to Vis?
No, but I've heard that it's
It's so beautiful.
That one's kind of smaller, like
It's like tiny, and there's like one little street of shops and cafes, and then there's just the bay, and we Vespa'd like through the mountains to this other place called Komija, which is like another tiny town. And
oh my God.
It's just very beautiful. When's the last time you've been?
The last time was 2018. Mm. Yeah. It's been a while. And then, as I mentioned to you, I'm still waiting for my green card to come in, so I can't leave the country. But I'm going to go next summer because my parents live there full time now, and my dad, he renovates houses and like flips them. And so they got this property that they're going to be renting out, but they keep showing me video updates constantly of this estate that they got for super cheap. And
where was this?
It's like, it's outside of Zadar. What is it called? Some small town that's like 20 minutes outside, but like right on the water. It's so nice. Yeah. It's been so funny because, you know, they're proud of me, but with all the book stuff that's happening, they have no context for a lot of this stuff. So I'll, you know, send them something and I'm like, no, this is like a really big deal. Like, and they're like, the New York Times, like, just have no it's like very humbling, I think. Mm-hmm. But the other day they were like, you know, I was talking to them on the phone, and then I was sort of trying to tell them like, yeah, I'm having this book launch and whatever, and my mom just proceeded to like spend like 10 minutes, both of them actually, talking about like the tiling job in the house. And I'm like, cool. Okay, well, I'm gonna go to my launch now. And then my dad texted me, good luck on your book review. And I just love, I love the idea that there's just like a town review.
One review. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're so like, just often they seem like, it's like beautifully oblivious.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so nice, because if it ever gets to my head, I can just call them and they're like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're like, we're focusing on various tasks at hand. And
they're doing real work in the real world. It's, mm-hmm. it's far more impressive to me, like what my parents do. So
I'm curious too. Like, I mean, I don't know how to start this. I don't want to like ask you what your religion is, but
yeah,
I feel a certain type of neuroses that your characters kind of deal with. And I just kept thinking about our Catholic Croatian guilt.
Totally. I don't think I realized how much I had internalized the guilt. So yeah, I grew up Catholic. I'm nothing now. I mean, I'm like, I live in LA, I guess I'm spiritual or I'm more Buddhist leaning, I suppose. But, it definitely, I kind of always carried the sense of like, I'm a bad person. And I don't even know that I only recently came to this conclusion after having written a book, which is sort of the way that truths get presented to you from your subconscious or whatever, after some time. And, I think it's been extra difficult, you know, being a full-time writer, like deciding to quit my job and just doing this, the day-to-day, I just feel mired in guilt. And it feels like this guilt that doesn't belong to me. It's like from my ancestors or something.
Like you yeah. should be doing something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so I have to consciously tell myself, like, you are allowed to do this. In fact, you have to, because you have deadlines for things. And this is also a worthy way to spend a life, you know, but it is something that I think I struggle with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know this. Oh, for sure. This is like, there's such recognition in your writing, for me, at least personally, feeling guilt for other people's mishaps or for things that you have no control over. And it's a really good, like, exercise in empathy too, because you just walk around feeling responsible for things all the time.
I was saying, like, it seems so peaceful to be a sociopath. Like that just seems so wonderful, because I'm constantly just feel like I'm keeping tabs on how everyone in my life is doing and worrying about them as if that's kind of doing anything, but it's not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to put that out there, 'cause, to let you know that I feel it. But like, how are you, how are you doing? Like, some big, so is today, sorry, yesterday was your book launch officially, right?
Yes.
Okay. So congratulations.
Thank you.
How does it feel? I mean, it seems like, look, you people are writing in The Cut. You've got the New York Times. Like, that's pretty awesome. Did you ever imagine that when you were like working day jobs in your 20s or?
Absolutely not. It's been interesting because I feel like I'm so in it now to even be able to sort of narrativize or reflect on this experience. Like yesterday, I think I was just in a state of full panic all day. I think that's maybe what people don't realize, when on the outside, it seems like so many really incredible things are happening and my, you know, dream has been realized. But then what comes with that is like this sort of onslaught of energy being thrown at you kind of all at once. And that's sort of how the publishing process has always been. It's like you don't hear anything from anyone for years, and it's this thing that's just an idea in your head and a Word document. And then, you know, the week that it sells, suddenly you have to do a million phone calls. And I just keep thinking about that scene in the movie Matilda, where like the chubby boy who eats the cake, the like, I don't know, the head teacher was like, made him eat an entire chocolate cake in front of the class until he got sick. And that comes to mind with all of this, because I would have loved all of these things to be doled out over months so I could actually enjoy them, because it's like, you can't internalize, you know, and it's, I'm speaking on such a small scale, obviously, like, who knows how this book will be received or, you know, what kind of life it will have. But for me to go from feeling like really nothing feels real or is happening to suddenly, you know, and this will be over. I can go back to my quiet life, but it was like so overwhelming. And I think some people thrive, you know, in events, public speaking. I have learned that I am not so great at that. I love doing readings, but it's like I really over-exercise the writing part of my capacity to communicate, and then just absolutely never spoke out loud for 3 years. And all of a sudden I'm doing these things where it's like podcasts and mm-hmm. interviews, and I am horrified. Like someone sent me a transcript. They were so kind to let me edit it afterwards. And I was like, this is so incoherent. Like if this were to be published, And so I feel like I do my best writing, honestly, like on text message and email. And but this is great practice for me. The only problem is you're practicing in real time in front of people. So mm-hmm. Check in with me in like 2 months. I'm gonna really hone my skills.
yeah. I mean, if I could like glean anything about you from some of your characters or the totality of your characters, it's probably that you have some level of value. You probably value privacy a little bit, and like having your like a rich inner life and not necessarily being exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause I don't, it's a lot of pressure even to put on one day to have a book launch and then also do an event, but you're in my mind, it's an entirely different experience because I'm just thinking like, are people going to show up? You know, it's sort of that fear that no one's going to come to your birthday party. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why did I sign up for doing events like this all summer? It's like the anxiety is unbearable. But
they always show up, don't they?
They do. And it was such a great turnout. Mm-hmm. And I love Skylight so much. So it was so great. But it was just by the end of the night, people were asking me very simple questions. And I was just like, not even there. And but I do feel like I broke the seal. And then tonight I'm doing another event that should be really fun at Stories. And I think I'm more prepared for that because I have a few friends reading and it's not just going to be me, you know? So I'm excited for that. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the stories are fantastic. They're super funny. And I don't know, like the humor, I'm always just deeply impressed with humor. I guess I'm kind of curious, like how long have you been working on some of these? I know, was it The Intruder that won this or was shortlisted for the Seed Prize? That I'm curious about the, I guess, gestation period of the collection and where you were when you started it.
Yeah, I wrote most of them. So I quit my job at the end of 2018 to fully just focus on writing, which was such a crazy thing to do. But I felt like I really needed to do that. I wrote a couple stories before that, The Intruder being one of them, and then A Free Woman. And that's kind of, and then I had bits and pieces of stuff. But before I quit my job, I was just writing on the weekends and I was working full time. I was driving like 3 hours a day to Santa Monica there and back. It was there by the end of the day, I just was totally fried. So I just couldn't do it, but I really wanted to. And, you know, a lot of my friends are artists and it took me a long time to even figure out the logistics of how I would write full time. It just, you know, Catholic guilt and sort of that like immigrant work ethic. I had never not had a job, like an office job. So I was really nervous, you know, and I'm in LA, I'm an immigrant. Like there were so many unknowns, but, I kind of just focused on saving up as much as I could. And then, not really having a plan beyond just giving myself a few months to write. And then hopefully to figure it out from there, which I did. I sort of parlayed it into freelance work and I got some grants and stuff. But yeah, it was from the end of 2018 to 2020. That's where I wrote most all of it. And then I started editing it with a freelance editor.
That's a pretty courageous decision to quit. I think most people fantasize about quitting their day job and really diving in and just doing it.
You have a day job, right?
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it is remote.
Oh, nice.
And no one seems to care or know anything about me. Yeah, so you just kind of stay quiet, you know?
Yeah.
I guess when you had all this stuff done in 2020, or you began the editing process, like what's like the organizational principle of putting a collection together?
I feel like I didn't even start talking about the order of it until it was like, we were almost ready to go with it. But I kind of used the logic of, I guess, sort of like front loading the hits of like an album or something, you know, where I'm like, I need to capture people's attention. These seem to be the ones that people like at readings. And My New Life, the first story, felt very representative of the kind of tone. And so I put that one first. But yeah, I guess I didn't really think about it that much. My editor had some ideas about it, but yeah. And then I wanted to sort of end it with Daddy's Girl, because that really starts to, that was one of the last ones that I'd written, and it kind of lends itself to the novel that I'm working on now. So I thought that could be kind of cool to kind of get people into that world a little bit more.
So can you tell us a little bit about the novel and like how it relates to Daddy's Girl?
Yeah. So I, when I sold the collection, my publisher asked if I had any novel ideas, and I had one story that I had fleshed out, for a director friend of mine who was asking if I had a screenplay idea, you know, living in LA, everybody's always,
you gotta have the screenplay,
asking about the screenplay. Yeah. And I, put together the story for him, and, earnestly had a plan of starting the screenplay, but I had just gotten to the point where I wrote the outline, kind of like the beats and like whatever. It was like my first thing that I'd mapped out, because every story had sort of just come to me. I was sort of feeling my way around in the dark and didn't really have an end point or a plan. So that this was one full story arc. And my agent was like, do you have a novel idea? And I was like, I have this one story. She was like, write a paragraph synopsis. And I did. And then they bought it as a novel. And I did not expect that, but I was, you know, thrilled, because I'm like, wow, if I ever, now I could maybe adapt it and someone else could write the screenplay or, you know, whatever. But yeah, so the novel idea, it's probably the closest I've ever gotten to sort of mining my like family and my history and my culture. And it came out of a bunch of very bizarre events that occurred over one summer with my family in Croatia. And I started thinking about, I had an opportunity to go to this therapy retreat for free that was otherwise so expensive and crazy, but they took like a group of artists every year for free for 4 days, and I was invited to go. And I'd never been to a therapy retreat. I mean, I'd done therapy and—
Wait, this was in Croatia?
No, so this was in Nashville.
And I was gonna say, that does not sound like a Croatian activity.
I know. But they have way different therapy retreats there. It's like exorcisms. And, but yeah, so I went to this therapy retreat in 2019, and that was like my first encounter with someone telling all of us about childhood trauma, and, you know, the years of 0 to 7 are sort of crucial in kind of laying the groundwork for who you are, and sort of kind of painting this picture that your parents were to blame for everything. And it was funny because I had to fly straight to a wedding where my entire family was after this like very hardcore, intense therapy retreat. And it got me thinking about, you know, I think a lot of us are like, obviously there's so many positives to therapy and the language, having that language and having the resources and just being really therapy positive now, but there's also the other side of it where you can sort of victimize yourself forever and kind of create this narrative that your parents are the villains for whatever reason. And that can also be a sort of disempowering narrative and very limiting. And I saw it happen to me briefly before I could move on and sort of realize and have a more nuanced approach at like,
was there, sorry to interrupt, was there a period where you kind of like felt yourself taking it out on your parents?
I wasn't taking it out on them, but I definitely sort of had this new perspective. It was like somebody had given me permission to sort of blame them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I ran with that. Yeah. I really indulged that for a season of my life, which I think is actually a necessary entry point to healing a lot of the stuff, childhood stuff. And mine wasn't even that bad. Like nothing terrible happened to me. It was just, you know, a chaotic environment because my parents were in their early 20s, immigrants, you know, both worked full time. So I was honestly left kind of alone with my sister and later my brother to kind of just be a kid. And yeah, so anyway, so I went through this whole experience where I felt a little bit radicalized by my new therapy language and kind of moving through that and now having just so much compassion for my parents and like their lives were so much harder than mine is and could ever be. And they actually did a really incredible job. And so I wanted to kind of take that concept and create this kind of like delusional character who goes to a therapy retreat and then wants to sort of exact revenge on her family and her community by kind of going home and under the guise of like this documentary that she's filming about a local, I don't know if you were in Kola growing up, but like this Croatian folk dance competition. But she's actually secretly kind of, you know, filming her, exposing her parents for what they did. I don't know if that's like very clear, mm-hmm. but it's very absurdist, satirical still, but kind of getting at there's so many different perspectives, I think, with different family members and thinking about the past and how things were and not centering yourself kind of as a victim. I just think that there's a lot to play with in that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's almost impossible to like understand what your parents have gone through. Like, especially immigrant parents, if I can speak for mine, it's like a lot of the discussion is like they didn't learn that therapy language growing up, right? So a lot of the discussion is sort of superficial, like, how are you? How's it going? But you don't really actually get often, like my mother was never able to speak with my grandparents about like, what does it mean to be a parent and to be an immigrant and stuff? I mean, the perspectives are so far away that it's like, yeah, it makes for great material.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so fascinated by all of it and how different people experience different things. And you're only as conscious and enlightened as you are and really sort of understanding that people, you know, yeah, they weren't afforded the language and like the experience of being like a young woman now with, you know, full permission to kind of explore her feelings. It's like these, you know, they kind of are only where they're at. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a great book. I'm how's it coming along? Okay. Do you feel the pressure of like, I've got to turn this into something by this date?
Yeah, I do have a deadline.
Sorry to remind you of it. I know you have a lot going on.
I sort of I haven't touched it in like 2 months, honestly, because I went into full book promo mode pretty early, actually, since like last year. I was already, you know, trying to come up with different things that I could do. Like I did these book trailers with my friend. And I did, I, I've been insane, honestly. I've like made t-shirts. I
bought just, one, like, by the way. No worries if not.
I cannot believe how many people keep buying those shirts. I sort of feel like I should, I keep like pricing it down because I'm like, they're not good. But I think that's sort of the aesthetic, like if people like that they're kind of shitty looking. But
yeah, the logo's like pretty much halfway down the chest. Yeah.
Oh my God. I can get it. I can do a reprint for you. I have no quality control over that.
It's part of the charm. Don't worry.
Okay, cool. Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I recommend everyone buy these shirts.
Yeah.
Very fun. I get a lot of, I'm in Beacon. I'm living in Beacon now. And when I walk around, I get a lot of questions.
Oh yeah.
And I'm wearing the shirt. So, all right, well, hey, but something you said earlier about your writing that I'm interested in is, I kind of forget the quote, but it was something along the lines of you kind of make these stories up as you go along.
Right.
I'm sort of interested, like in, I guess we could talk about my favorites. I hate to say favorite because I don't want to be like exclusionary of others, but I just think The Intruder was like phenomenal. And some friends of mine, they plot the whole thing out. Others simply have an image in mind and fly by the seat of their pants. So like, what is it? Where do you usually begin with a story?
Yeah. I mean, I keep notes of just sort of different funny things that I observe. I have endless notes, and then sometimes I'll just kind of sit with them and pull out what really kind of keeps coming up, I guess, like a certain theme. But yeah, for The Intruder, that one was sort of loosely based on a somewhat similar experience that I had / forever fear. I think any woman that lives alone, especially on the ground floor, you just have all of these, I wouldn't call them fantasies, but you are sort of like, okay, if somebody breaks in, I would go out through this window, or you're just kind of playing it out, and then just like listening to way too much like true crime. And you know, and it wasn't totally off base. I was like living in East Hollywood. There was always like helicopters flying overhead. It wasn't like the safest neighborhood. But there was this one night where a friend of mine, she was, her and her boyfriend were staying with me. They're from Toronto. And I had this little one bedroom kind of bungalow, and I was working full time, as I said. So I was kind of just always exhausted. But I was also sort of trying to like take her around. And I didn't really know her boyfriend too well, but he seemed nice. And they were staying in my living room. And there was this one night, I think maybe it was the first night actually that they slept over. I have this, there was a bathroom right behind kind of where my bed was. And if you turn on the light, the fan goes on. So you kind of immediately hear it. And it was like 3 a.m. Suddenly I heard my bathroom light and fan go off. And I also am totally blind without contacts or glasses. I can't see anything. So I was so tired that I forgot I had guests, and I leapt out of bed, and I didn't even have time to find my glasses. So I leapt out of bed, I opened the door, and all I see is a shadow of a man standing in my bathroom. And I have no recollection of, I can't even see his face. And it's interesting now to see that was like my instinct, was to just leap out of bed, not like be scared. I really kind of, so I opened the door, and then I screamed like I think I was like, who are you? And then in that moment, he was like, it's Joe. And the fear and the adrenaline was immediately met with just like the most embarrassed I ever felt in my life. Like I kind of like crumbled on the ground and was just like, oh my God, I'm insane. Like, I'm so sorry. I totally forgot that you were here. And I think it sort of revealed, like, I probably didn't want guests that week because I was so stressed.
It also revealed like what your like what your reaction would be in an extremely vulnerable, frightening moment.
I'm actually proud of myself.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, actually, were you proud? Because I think I would run away like out of the house.
Yeah, no, so, I am proud that that was sort of my my instinct was to kind of attack mode, which so I just had that story and that night, and it was so strong in my mind because I've never felt so embarrassed, because they stayed with me for like a few days afterwards. Mm-hmm. And in the morning I was like, I won't yell, you know. And I just, yeah, that the concept of sort of always bracing yourself for someone to break in, and I just wanted to sort of, you know, to the point of like absurdity, this woman is planning for, and nobody's out there, and no one is mm-hmm. she's so convinced that someone's out there, and it's almost like she's obviously very lonely and isolated, and she sort of wishes, I think, you know, and to have somebody to practice with. I just thought that was an interesting like flip of a power dynamic, where she then kind of instructs this man to play as her intruder with the ski mask and reenact it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it ends in a delightful way. Yeah. I guess what I'll say is like your characters and probably just human beings at large in our current world deal like in varying ways with extreme anxiety. So it's like, whether it's like fear of somebody breaking in, or like sexual self-awareness that makes them uncomfortable, or intrusive thoughts was like a theme I noticed a lot. Have you learned anything new about either like your own anxiety or like the concept of anxiety in writing from these like various perspectives? I figured if you spent so much time, 300 pages writing about anxiety, you know, like it would probably force you to have some new perspective on it.
I think my new perspective is that I sort of thought that everyone felt that way all the time. And only now am I learning that I might be uniquely in my head kind of overthinking everything. Yeah. And I think it also goes back to thinking about my parents and my ancestors and what they had to sort of endure versus me. And then also, you know, maybe the ancestral trauma in me. It's like I come from a lineage of people who have, for very valid reasons, had to probably be a little bit more on the defense and kind of like muscle their way through life. But it's like, you put somebody like that into a, you know, a very quiet sort of suburban street in Los Angeles where there is no direct threat or danger, that will kind of transmute into maybe more of an existential. It's like this energy has to go somewhere. So if it's not being in war, then it's like checking my email, you know, like it's got to come out some way. And I think it's something that we all sort of, yeah, struggle with, where it's still the same amount of kind of anxiety and panic, but the stakes are much lower, but you couldn't convince us otherwise.
Yeah. Displaced. I don't know. I don't think about the ancestral thing as much as maybe I should, but like I'd like that as a principle, right? Like, and like some people say that's where phobias come from. It sounds like you kind of agree that we sort of share this ancestral memory.
Totally. Yeah. Do you have any phobias?
Yeah, I have.
Like real ones where it's
break-ins, actually, are really this is probably why I love the intruder so much, but break-ins are for me, since I was a child, have been like, I would like set up little booby traps and stuff in my parents' foyer and like obstacles on the stairwells and stuff so that nobody would break in, and I would like sleep with like little wiffle ball bats under my bed. I mean, it's been since I was a child.
Where did that come from? Did something happen or
I don't know. My earliest memory is my mom was in law enforcement, and she was, yeah, so my immigrant mother came here and became like the chief probation officer of like the second largest county in Ohio. And so I grew up, I was probably 5 or 6. We just kind of laughed about this the other day. I was telling her one of my earliest childhood memories was when we drove by a few bikers on the highway, and she explained to me like all the crimes of the Hell's Angels. So
yeah.
What about you?
God, yeah. Also, I love these stories. I always watch like my YouTube homepage is just filled with like little like reincarnation videos where they talk to kids and they just like know about their past lives or like near death experience type stuff. I'm so obsessed.
Have you heard about the kid who knew he was like an Royal Air Force pilot in World War II and they like took him back to the place where his plane crashed?
Yeah. Was that the one that was on the Netflix series?
I think so. There's also a Radio Lab about it. Yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That stuff creeps me out, but I love it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's real? Do you believe in reincarnation?
I don't know. But I'm very intrigued. I love anything that sort of speaks to, you know, the mystery and what is beyond. I anything sort of esoteric. That's for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you feel then? And it comes up in your fiction a lot too. How do you feel then about the kind of like maybe whitewashed sort of superficial spirituality that people kind of experience in LA? Like what goes through your mind when you see, I don't know, it's popular out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is really kind of home to a lot of
your characters kind of look at it with disdain.
Yeah. I mean, this is like peak wellness industry and a lot of spiritual materialism, you know, and I think maybe that's the thing that's sort of both hilarious to me and off-putting, because I do feel like I have had, you know, certain experiences with whatever you want to call it. And that's been like really kind of personal to me, or like taking mushrooms and you're like, okay, I get it. There's a bigger reality, that I think when people sort of repackage it and exploit it, in like a capitalist way, it feels very wrong to me, because it's sort of like, you know, that they sort of exclusively have access to, you know, the spirit realm or whatever. It's like, I don't know. I don't need to buy like a special rock or like a course to experience that. It's sort of like my birthright to, you know, but it is very funny. There's a lot of sort of fringe cults, and you can take tours like of their temples and their churches. And so I kind of like to see the types of people that go to those things. And wow.
Yes, I agree. I just am recently getting into transcendental meditation, and like I have somebody in my life who knows how to do it, which is good. But otherwise, I know there's like you've got to get like you got to like pay somebody thousands of dollars to get your mantra. And so there's a lot of like exclusionary stuff that goes into it lately, which is weird.
Yeah. And I get that, because for a lot of people, they need that container and they need that entry point, and, you know,
and it holds you accountable, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't have encountered certain spiritual teachers without listening to their podcasts or finding them on YouTube. Like, I understand that there is a certain amount of capitalism that we just sort of have to accept. It does, it can so easily go off the rails and be sort of, predatory
and cultish.
And cultish.
Yeah. I could see myself joining a cult. What about you?
I've been in a handful of cult like environments throughout my life. Which is very strange, because I don't like group activities. Like I'm such a loner, and it really doesn't make a ton of sense. I've gone to retreats, and I once like worked for a nonprofit, and I lived in a house with 60 people, and there was a lot of culty elements to that. And you know, I've been to weird breathwork classes in LA and that sort of thing. But I always see myself as like an observer, kind of in the back with my arms crossed, being like, and I think that does come from, you know, growing up in church, or in my early 20s, there was like a moment where I worked for a nonprofit, and people were always like wanting to take me to their church, I think, to get me into it. And I just could not buy it. I don't know. There was like the American flavor of Christianity, more like evangelical and that sort of thing, felt it just was so bizarre to me. I just didn't, maybe because I didn't grow up with that. You know, I did the regular normal, like Catholic, sacraments and, you know, kneeling and doing all the weird rituals, you know, mm-hmm. regular stuff.
Of course. But, I assume you've been, baptized, confirmed.
Oh yeah. The whole bit. Yeah. But, obviously there's something that's like really fascinating about the way that people experience reality collectively. I think in a lot of ways, like we're in such a secular world and people are sort of grasping at spirituality or like personal development or therapy or mm-hmm. that sort of thing in the absence of more like organized religion. And so I think you just naturally see people wanting to, find their community with that.
Mm-hmm. The world that we live in now, what do you think that has sort of done, especially when you consider things like the internet and the fact that we're constantly in communication with one another? And like, what do you think now that has done to like spirituality?
In some ways, it's made it so much more accessible, don't you think? Like the stuff that I came upon by myself was I grew up watching Oprah as a kid, loved her. Mm-hmm. And then that's how I found like Deepak Chopra and Gary Zukav and all of those teachers. But now it's like, I'm not on TikTok, but I hear things. Mm-hmm. People are so much more informed and they have, you know, which is, it could be a good or a bad thing. I don't know, but I think I don't know. What do you think?
I guess I often think about, I think I just really romanticize the past, especially when you go somewhere like Croatia where everything you touch is older than your entire nation by like like thousands of years. I guess I sometimes think about just like how unconnected to my surroundings and that like sort of the mystery. I like that phrase, the mystery. And I love like, I feel a little bit less in touch, even though we're all connected. I feel like I don't know, there's something's missing.
Yeah,
when your mind is sort of in a thousand places at once.
Totally. Yeah, I think in some ways I've regressed, and then in some ways I feel so much more enlightened, I suppose. But the creative process even is just a touch point for me too. I don't claim to feel like I'm like a vessel or anything, but mm-hmm. I do sometimes wonder where ideas come from or why I wrote a certain thing. And I don't know. I think sometimes it feels like I'm in conversation with something, even if that's just my subconscious or my dreams. And, you know, that's such a mysterious part of myself that, it feels like there's something there. And because I'm able to sort of really indulge, my mind all day, kind of in an uninterrupted way, for better or worse, I get to read a lot of, you know, religious books and like mm-hmm. philosophical books and kind of listen to podcasts and be in that world a little bit more. And that maybe that's why I feel more, I guess, connected, because it does feel like such a personal thing, you know, like, mm-hmm. yeah. And also just like getting older, right? I think you become softened by suffering and just moving through the world and experiencing loss and all of that stuff. It does. I think it does naturally, for at least if you're paying attention, make people become a little bit more, if you want to say spiritual, or at least like connected to something beyond their day to day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you somebody who, like, do you put stock in your dreams? Like, do you write them down? Do you analyze them? Do you remember them?
Yes. It's such a funny, like, unoriginal thing to be like, I have the craziest dreams. Like, I feel like some women especially are always like bragging about their crazy dreams. Like, that, I don't know. It's such a weird flex, but I do have crazy dreams. It's because I eat, well, like I eat a lot of cheese at night and it fucks me up.
Is that supposed to help?
it's the work. No, it's not helping me, but it will give you really vivid dreams. I'm not doing it for that. I'm just.
That'd be a really interesting tactic.
That's who I am. And I have gone through, you know, months of like, I'll keep like a dream journal type thing. I'm not so great at that, but there have been a few with people who have passed that come into my dreams sort of out of nowhere. Like I remember this one time, my grandfather was like the first person in my life that I sort of was there when he passed and for the whole thing. And it really was formative for me in my understanding of death. And I was listening to a lot of like Ram Dass at the time, and he did a lot of stuff with like hospice, and I was getting into a really weird dark place. But anyway, so and that was like 8 or 9 years ago, but he'll come into my dreams sometimes. And this one time he came in maybe a year ago, it was him and then my great uncle who had passed, and they were sitting in a room, and it felt like a different quality of a dream, but they were both telling me what the afterlife was like. And they were sort of like, it's not so bad. We're kind of it sounded like they were in some sort of like a step up from hell, like maybe like a purgatory or mm-hmm. something, but they were like, don't worry, it's not that bad. And I remember my great uncle kind of nudging him and being like, you're telling her too much, like, stop, like, you can't.
Wow.
It was so creepy. I woke up and I was like, what was that? And why did I don't know. Yeah.
That is fascinating. I kind of believe them. I really do. I learned recently that like in the 70s, 80s and 90s, and probably today, that like intelligence agencies have been studying dreams and extrasensory perception. And there's like this parapsychology studies that the government does. And I've also learned recently that like, if you report certain dreams to certain three-letter agencies, that they will like follow up with questions if they're like globally significant, that like even our government puts a pretty heavy stake in dreams. I'll send this information to you.
Oh my God. I love this stuff so much. Yeah. I'm so into like Project Stargate and like the sound frequency stuff.
There you go. It's Stargate was referenced. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was on this huge like sound frequency kick for a while, listening to the original tapes, the ones that it was like the Robert Monroe tapes or whatever from the 70s.
He's got a book, right? He wrote like this whole tell-all. Yeah.
Journeys Out of the Body or something. And that was really trippy for a while. And I ended up buying like an EEG headband that reads your brainwaves while you're doing these meditations. And so I have like a folder of just all of these graphs of what my brain is doing and the different waves. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I went really deep actually down that.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Similar, maybe shared elements of OCD that we have, but it's one question I had that somebody asked on Patreon that I'm also just very curious about is, what was your last intrusive thought? Because intrusive thoughts play a very important role in bad thoughts, I thought. I said thought a lot there. But we all deal with them, but certain people, certain characters act on them or can't suppress them to the point where they can continue to function.
Yeah. I mean, how do you even pick? I would say I had this weird superstition that I was maybe going to die before my book came out. And I was really being careful when I was driving, because I thought that would happen. You know, there's this book called The War of Art. I don't know if you've read it.
I've read it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, when he says the resistance is strongest at the finish line, and he even sort of ascribes like family drama as like the resistance showing up in your life. It's like a very narcissistic way to look at things, but it's like sort of that there's this force that's conspiring against you to not put art out into the world for whatever reason. And you have to overcome that. And I thought, oh no, my life is in danger before my book comes out. Something bad's going to happen to me. I'm going to die, or I'm, going to get sick or something, you know? And that was, I guess that was sort of, I legitimately felt relieved yesterday when I thought, okay, I made it and now it's, everything's going to be fine. But yeah, that one was,
I really relate to that. That's how I felt with my wedding. I was like, I was like, this is, you know, I was like watching the news. I was like, some, you know, something's going to happen. And it's a really overpowering feeling. Yeah. Okay. That's a good one.
I think it's a way to sort of channel the ambient anxiety into sort of a concentrated fixed point. That's how I sort of see what my brain is doing when I have maybe something that feels so outside of my control and so much bigger than me and also has all this symbolism and meaning around it. I'll fixate on something that's fairly trivial, you know, in an obsessive way that it's just, it doesn't even make any sense. And it's such a waste of time. And then I'll, you know, like even with planning my book tour, I suddenly took it upon myself to learn, to teach myself Photoshop. And my best friend is literally like a graphic designer, visual artist. She could have, and she did help a little bit, but like, it was like, why did I need at this point to just go so hard on Photoshop?
Right.
And you can see that fires are not good, but you know, obviously that's my aesthetic. My husband says it's an anti-design aesthetic, which I'm just going to own that now.
But, nice. I like that.
Yeah. And so it's just, I've sort of come to like accept it as like, oh, this part of me is actually trying to save me from, there are sort of too many things coming at me and I'll
focus on the one
for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and your characters do that too. And a lot of times it makes for really refreshing, like levels of detail and repetition that, I don't know, it's like unique to the way that you think.
Yes, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, I hope you're really proud of the book. I mean, it's awesome. And
thank you.
And very, very funny. And like, I hope the rest of the tour goes well. What else is on the agenda? Like, what do you have to do?
Okay, so tonight I have a reading at Stories with, you know, my friend Aiden Narada is hosting. She's so funny. It's a bunch of funny women, and that'll be great. And then I'm going, and then I have a event at Despair Books, which is like this really cool bookstore in Echo Park next week. And then I'm going to New York. I have the girls from Forever Magazine have been planning this event for me, and it's this like crazy thread that I sometimes will look at, but it's so overwhelming to me, whatever. So I just trust them. Allie Rowbottom is going to be hosting. And so that'll be fun. That'll be on the 28th. I'm going to announce that soon. And I decided that I wanted to do like a performance of a sort of different take on a reading. So on August 4th, I'm going to be doing a performance at the Elysian Theater, which is like this sort of indie, like comedy improv theater. It's so fun. I've never done this before, but I put together a PowerPoint presentation, sort of like visual aids as I'm reading to kind of, I don't know, make it a full multimedia experience. So I hope people come to that.
That's awesome. I like cool. that is very putting yourself out there. That's really cool.
I know. What am I doing?
Why not? You know, just, you got to experience everything. So
yeah, that's cool. Really running into the fire with all of this stuff, but it is good for me, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. That's great. Well, I'll try to come to some of those in New York for sure. Come say hi. Yeah,
it'd be great to meet in person and further continue our discussions about Croatia and our joint heritage. Do you... Croatian or
I'm currently trying to learn, like I speak very small amounts, enough to communicate with my Bubba, but then it gets very confusing because if you go to Croatia, people are like, that's not how we say Bubba.
I know.
And I'm just like, I don't know, man, you know. So are you fluent?
I'm not fully fluent. Obviously I've lost a lot, but what I started doing last year was I was like, I just need someone to talk to once a week. I just kind of need to brush up on it and have it in my brain so that when I go home, I don't embarrass myself because my cousins just will make fun of me. Mm-hmm. So my friend told me about this site called Preply, which is, you can learn a language on video with a teacher for any language, and you literally will just scroll through a bunch of different teachers, and they have their little intro videos. And so it felt like online dating a little bit, but I picked this one teacher, this like really cool 22-year-old in Split. And we have become good friends. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Every week, her name's Bruna. She's amazing. Like, we really just talk shit and like gossip. And it's so funny that I have this like pen pal, and like, I'm going to visit her when I go out there. But that actually has helped me a lot, just to kind of be with somebody who, you know, is safe and not going to like,
yeah, not mock you like your cousins.
Like, pas de jeu, and the like, it's so much more complicated than English. So
it's really, really challenging. And even they'll tell me like, don't worry about it. Like, this language makes no sense. But will she correct you while you guys are talking, or you guys just sort of chat?
Yeah. She's gotten a little lax now that we're like such close friends. She's like thrown the grammar sheet out the window, and we need to get a little bit more serious now. But yeah, she'll correct me, or I'll be like, what's the word for that again? Like, I'll just kind of but it's been so great. I highly recommend
it. I will do that. Like, I will sign up for it. I'm doing,
and it's so cheap. It's like $20 a class, and
yeah, that would be great for me, because, you know, I want to talk to my grandma and my cousins and all that. So
yeah, or just, you know, immerse yourself, live there for like 3 months, and then you'll be bullied into
your parents and and my parents, who got places there, like writer's residency all the way.
Oh my god, we should totally.
How perfect does that sound?
Yeah, my parents are building a pool. I never had a pool growing up. Like, that's what wild. The hell. Yeah, let's do it.
It's a good life. Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me on. I love this podcast. Definitely, let's hang out if you're around. And
yeah, I would love to. I'll come down and say hi as long as I'm in town. I have a lot of people getting married and stuff. But yes, I would love to come say hello and be there. Cool. So you know that you have at least one audience member, even though I know it'll be full. So.
Oh my god! Yeah, one creation in
there. There you go. All right. Well, yeah, it was great talking to you. I know I'll keep in touch, and hopefully I'll see you in person soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Bye.